Well, good morning, everyone, and thank you so much, Lynn, for greeting folks and helping with a little Q&A. My name is Samantha, and I'm pleased to serve as your worship associate this morning alongside a very fulsome online worship team to host this second Sunday of May on our theme of what does it mean to be a people of thresholds. In a spirit of gratitude and respect, I acknowledge the Wasainich First Nations on whose traditional territory we usually gather. I encourage you all to get out to the parks in Victoria where the camas is in bloom. To me, the camas is a reminder of the ways of living that predated settler occupation of this land and the resilience of Coast Salish peoples. We are so glad that you could join us today on this beautiful summer-like weekend. I hope that you are keeping cool as well as safe. If you are new to our Zoom meetings or to the congregation or joining after a long absence, know that you are especially welcome here. I have a few announcements before we get started. There is a children's program today at noon. The program is aimed at elementary school age children, but all are welcome, including parents and caregivers. The Zoom link is available through email, and if you happen to not get that email, you can contact Erin Liddell for the Zoom link to today's session. There's also social justice story time still happening every morning, 8:30. All ages are welcome. It's on every day except Sunday, so I encourage you to tune in. That's also on Zoom. Thank you to Lindsay for hosting that. For other programming for children, parents, and caregivers, please see the eWeekly or, again, the emails from Aaron. We will be posting information in the chat window throughout the service. If you find the chat pop-ups to be distracting, I encourage you to find a way to minimize them so you can focus on the information you want to focus on. And after the service, you'll be invited to join a breakout room for conversation. So within Zoom, you'll have a little join button. Unfortunately, you'll have to supply your own coffee and tea. We can't do that virtually. If you need someone to talk to after the service one-on-one, we have two empathy buddies on duty, Lynn, who was also our greeter this morning, and Steve Charlo. Their contact information by phone is in the chat box, and they'll be available after the service to provide a listening ear to anyone who needs it. All right, with all that said, I invite Reverend Melora Lingood to facilitate our chalice lighting this morning.
Thank you, Samantha. Hello, everyone. It's so good to see you out there in your Zoom boxes in Zoom land. I can't tell you how much it means to me to see you out there. So let's begin by lighting our chalices. If you have a chalice or candle near you, I invite you to light yours as I light ours here in the sanctuary. Let's breathe in. Out. May the flame of our faith burn brightly in this sanctuary, in your homes, in all of our hearts, connecting us with one another. Blessed be. I can't tell you how important it is to me to be able to see all of you out there in your Zoom boxes. For our moment of greeting one another, I invite you please to go into gallery view. For most of us, that's you do that by clicking the top right-hand corner where it says gallery view. And come, and if you would, please come close to the screen so we can see you. And you can bring your chalice with you if it's portable. Close to the screen, and then I'll unmute us on the count of three. Let's see what I can do. One, two, three. Wave and say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
See you.
Hello. Mother's Day.
Hey. Mother's Day.
Happy
Mother's Day.
Hi,
Shauna.
Hi, Paige.
Good to see everybody.
Hi,
Paige.
Mariko.
Jane.
Phyllis.
Morning,
Jan.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Burn and Teo again. Marianne, Philip,
Happy Mother's Day.
Hi, Laura.
Mother's Day.
Oh, fantastic. It is so good to have all of you here. It is so good to have all of you here. And a special shout out to those of you joining by phone. I can't see you, but I'm so glad you're here. Now, would you please return to speaker view? Again, for most of you, you click the top right-hand corner, click speaker view, so you can see Sam as she presents the story for all ages.
All right. I think all of you should be able to see. This is a picture of my grandmother, my father's mother. Today being Mother's Day, in this spirit, I wanted to honor my grandmother today, whose words of wisdom I find help to ground me through difficult times. My grandmother, her name was Doris, and my grandma Dory, and she was born to an Alberta pioneer family. She was an artist and a music teacher and very passionate about nature, the foothills, the mountains, the flowers. And she instilled in all of us grandchildren a few little things that I would like to share with you today. One thing my grandma used to always say is, God is love. I think my grandmother truly was a bit of a universalist. She always taught me that the essence of the divine was love. So this means to me that loving one another is the most holy and good thing that we can do. My grandmother had a favorite prayer. Many of you will be familiar with this one. It was on a placard in the doorway of her home in my grandfather's home. It's known as the Serenity Prayer, and it's about recognizing that we can't fix everything, and there's so much in the world that we can't do anything about. So it means worrying less about those things that I have less control over, and at the same time, knowing that there are some places where I can make a difference, a change for the better, and that knowing the difference isn't always so easy. So the prayer is for that guidance, to know where I can make a difference and to have that courage to make a difference, but also let go of those things that I can't. So this was a prayer that my grandma would often say. And for these times, I think it's so appropriate. This third one, the last one I wanted to share with you this morning, my grandmother would always say, when the going wasn't so easy, this too shall pass. And that means that everything on this earth has a beginning and an end. And through difficult times, we can find comfort in that there's light ahead. My grandmother inspired me to have a few sayings of my own, which I might share with you one day. They're sayings that I repeat to my children often enough that I hope it will settle into their minds and bring them comfort when they need it, and they'll pass it on to their children and grandchildren too. I wonder if you have little sayings from your own elders and ancestors that bring you comfort when you need it most. Or if you're working on your own little repertoire of things to hand down through the generations, what words might you want to share and be remembered for? Some of those words might actually be in song. And so I'd like to invite Nick to lead us a beautiful call and response with some words that may comfort you and that you might like to remember when you need it. I'm going to close my screen here and pass it over to Nick.
Good morning. As Samantha said, this is a call and response song. I'm going to sing the call, and I invite you to sing the response. Oh, we give thanks for this precious day, for all gathered here and those far away, for this time we share, and with love and care, oh, we give thanks for this precious day.
Thank you, Nick. I love that line, we're all gathered here and those far away.
As we prepare for our meditation this Mother's Day, I am keenly aware of all of those to whom we are connected, even when we are not physically together. Every Mother's Day, while many celebrate, I'm also aware of the heartache stirred in so many people, near and far. Church is where we bring our aching hearts, so let us begin there. Please join with me in the spirit of prayer and meditation. Settle into your seats. Take a deep breath. You may even wish to close your eyes. Spirit of life, power of love, stirring within each one of our hearts, moving between us and among us. We commend into your communal care all those for whom this Mother's Day is difficult. Those who are grieving a loss, the loss of a mother or a mother figure, the loss of a pregnancy, the loss of a child. We hold in our hearts those mothers who are worried about their children, as well as those children and adult children who are worried about their mothers. We hold in our tender care all whose relationships with their mothers or with their children or adult children don't fit the Hallmark ideal. What is one supposed to do with all of that on Mother's Day? The tension, anger, disconnection, hurt. Hold it gently, oh, so gently. We hold in our loving care people who long for children but don't have them, as well as people who don't want kids and are tired of social dictates that say that they should. And today, on this COVID Mother's Day, we hold in our hearts all those mothers and grandmothers who are in care homes or in any institution that is not allowing visitors. Prisons, hospitals, nursing homes. We hold in our hearts the mothers, grandmothers, and mother figures in all of those places, as well as those who love them. For the worry about getting sick, the sadness at not being able to be together in person, the way our hearts rebel and grieve at the thought of loved ones dying alone. We dig deep and reach down inward to feel that connection that binds us to those we love, however far away, alive or no longer living. Sadness, yes, but also love and gratitude, too. I invite you to take a moment to think of any mother or mother figure who has touched your life in a way that you appreciate. Could be grandmothers, aunts, teachers, mentors. No need to be restricted by gender. It could be anyone who gave you care that you wish to honor. As you think of the person or people you wish to honor this Mother's Day, each in turn, you may wish to consider whether there is a particular gift that they give you that you would also like to honor. A lesson they taught you, something you carry with you in your heart, one way in which they made your life better. Then, as you feel ready, if you wish, I invite you to write into the chat the name of the person you wish to honor this Mother's Day and a gift that they gave you. Feel free to post more than once or not at all. If you wish to post names only, that's fine too. I will read a few aloud as we go. Helen. Sherry P. Nina, Caroline, Oma, for the gift of laughter, the gift of curiosity, Peggy, for kindness, Mrs. Overhill from a grade 5 class, for her listening, Angela Teets and Carol Drew, Mother Leslie for unconditional love, Isla for humor and resilience, Grandmère. Fran Pardee was always there to listen to things I was wrestling with and gave me clarity. Vera. Tess, Aunt Tico. Mother Shirley Mae Henderson, Mom Doris. Another shout out to Fran Pardee. Margaret McCormick for the gift of music. Mom Rose. For those named aloud, for those typed into the chat, and for those named silently in our own hearts, we give thanks. We lift into our communal care the full spectrum of mixed emotions that arise in each of our human hearts. May we be gentle with ourselves and with one another. Blessed be.
Oh,
goodness. That was just amazing. Oh, that was beautiful. Thank you, Chalice Choir. It is so good to see you and hear you again. And thank you, Nick. Oh my gosh, it's like magic how you wove that all together. What a lot of work. Thank you. What a gift. What a gift. Thank you. And now the homily. The Ages of Invisibility. Have you ever felt invisible or devalued based on your age? Like people looked right through you or dismissed you or spoke to the person who was with you about your care instead of speaking directly to you? Maybe someone thought they were being kind to you, but their kindness had an edge of condescension. It happens to elders. It happens to little kids. Sometimes we do it to one another without even meaning to. I've been wondering about something we do as a community right here in this sanctuary, something I have done. I will present the story for all ages. I'll ask a question. A child will respond. And what do? I laugh. I laugh. Not in a mean-spirited way, of course not. My laughter is full of love. It is full of genuine appreciation for the child before me and delight in what they have to say. But I've been wondering, what is that like for the child? If they were trying to be funny, of course, laughter would be welcomed. But when a child is giving a serious answer, when they have sincerely considered the question and they are sharing their own unique thoughts and feelings, well, laughter, even kind-hearted laughter, might be experienced as belittling, like I'm not taking them seriously. My own daughter used to complain about this very thing when it happened to her or other kids at church. I used to try to explain that the laughter was an expression of love and appreciation. But I've since heard others share the same concern. And I've been thinking about that platinum rule. Treat others the way they wish to be treated, not the way I wish to be treated, or the way I think they should be okay with being treated. It is hard to shift. It's almost hard to imagine what that would feel like. A kid's message in which we don't smile and chuckle with delight at what the kids have to say. Then I came across a reading by Reverend Anne Principe about when she delivered a time for all ages in her UU congregation. The topic was courage. She was talking about how courage is when you do something scary or difficult, even when you are afraid. She asked the congregation if any of them had ever had to do something that was really hard. People of various ages raised their hands. She then asked, has anyone ever had to do anything courageous? And you were really, really scared. This is what she writes. And there is a jag in my throat as more adults raise their hands high, nodding. I am struck by the all ages element that I often shoot for and do not always reach. I see a tiny, skinny hand raised proportionally higher than anyone else's. I know this is the hand of a 4-year-old, eyes very wide, looking at me. And so I look back and I'm a little scared of why she's so adamant. I walk toward her, nodding, affirming. And you have had to do something really hard, even though it was scary? Yes, she says. I wonder if she'll be on topic. I hope she'll be appropriate. I worry that people will laugh because she is a child and she is cute and is speaking aloud to the congregation. What would you like to tell me, I ask. Would you like to tell me, I ask. Yes.
And she nods and nods, pumping herself up with courage. She seems to take a deep breath, nods once more, and says as clear as can be, I'm learning how to go night-nights by myself. Because I have the microphone, I repeat what she says in affirmation, looking around and collecting the nods of understanding. I practically fall apart because I don't want to move on. I want to sit down on the floor, call a circle, and talk about going night-nights all by ourselves. I want to talk about monsters. I want to talk about nightmares. I want to talk about our superpowers. I want to cry. Everyone's eyes, especially the adults, are wide and frozen, and their lids slowly blink in a chorus of yes, me too. End quote. Taking children seriously. That's living out our first UU principle, respecting the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Teenagers, too. Have you noticed how many people dismiss Greta Thunberg based on her age, instead of engaging the points that she makes about climate crisis? There's a TED Talk by a 12-year-old named Adora Spitak in which she makes a compelling case for abolishing the word childish. It is often used as an insult, meaning irrational, irresponsible, even selfish. But, she points out, consider imperialism and colonization, world wars, and the election of irrational and irresponsible world leaders. Who made these things happen, she asks. Adults. She has a point. Irrationality, irresponsibility, selfishness, these are human traits. As she says, age has nothing to do with it. I read in a youth source online this astute example of an ageist double standard. In the school system, when teachers yell at students, they are controlling classrooms. But when students yell at teachers, they are creating unsafe learning environments. Ageism diminishes and devalues and dismisses people at the other end of the age spectrum as well. Earlier this year, I was listening to a CBC radio program that was reporting on changes and challenges facing the Chinatown community in Vancouver. A member of the community was giving the CBC reporter a tour when they stopped in at the community center to observe a group of seniors, mostly in their 80s, playing mahjong. The tour guide actually said to the reporter, "They're so cute." It was so demeaning. And then one of them commented, one of the reporter and the tour guide commented, "The game looks so fierce. They look very serious." And they both laughed. It wasn't just that they thought it was silly to take a game seriously. I doubt they would have laughed like that at 20-year-old hockey players or 40-year-old poker players. I remember years ago visiting a congregant in a local hospital. He was probably 80 or so. And when the nurse came in, she was kind and sweet, but she spoke to him in the most condescending manner, like he was a toddler. She was cheerful but cajoling with an undercurrent of, "I need to manage you. How are we doing? Let's get you to eat this, and then you'll be all set. There now, isn't that better?" I remember feeling silently outraged on his behalf. How dare she speak to him that way? He was a whole adult human being. He was intelligent. He had accomplished things. He had talents and skills, life experiences that neither she nor I had ever had. I have since learned that there is a term for this. It's called elder speak. There's an exercise in a workshop on ageism that shows us a photo of Queen Elizabeth, who is 94 years old. The exercise says, let's pretend you just met. If you had the chance to talk to her, what would you say to her? Would you ask her what it was like to become queen at such a young age? Would you ask her her thoughts on how the world has changed in the years she has reigned? Or maybe your conversation would go more like this. Ooh, Queenie, sweetie, would you like some tea? Be careful, honey, that tea is hot. Here, let's blow on it together, shall we? The authors of the workshop continue, of course you wouldn't talk like that to Queen Elizabeth. Every person with whom you interact deserves no less dignified treatment and language than we would give the Queen. Obviously, the workshop says, this is quite an exaggeration. You know elder speak when you hear it, though. High-pitched tone, using endearing words instead of someone's name, slower, exaggerated speech. It's not an appropriate way to speak to an older person. Neither, they say, is controlling language, louder, firmer tone with an authoritarian finality to it. Both of these types of language serve to infantilize older people who have lived long, full lives. Add to the demeaning treatment all of the negative stereotypes of old people in our culture. The birthday cards portraying age as something to be dreaded. The TV shows that get cheap laughs by making fun of old people. The stereotypes of old people as being slow, incompetent, unattractive, or out of touch. Our culture teaches us to fear aging, which is kind of ridiculous since we are all aging. To age is to live. Writer and activist Ashton Applewhite points out that aging itself is not as miserable as our culture would have us believe. In fact, studies show that people are happiest at the beginnings and at the ends of their lives. It's called the U-curve. And if our culture wasn't so ageist, the experience of aging would be even better. Church member Nancy Gray Hemstock has worked for many years with older people, first as a social worker and now as a facilitator for saging courses, which are about growing older and growing wiser. She's the one who shared with me the resource that has the Queen exercise. Nancy says that we can unlearn our internalized ageism and learn to see elderhood as a time of growth, development, and spiritual evolution. I asked her to tell us more about that. Nancy?
Thank you. I am working on unlearning my own internalized ageism, and I always will probably. But and as I age, I reflect on and I understand ageism as one topic of a workshop I call Images of Aging. All my life, I've taken in information from my grandparents, my parents, media, and culture that being old is not what you want to be. I've internalized this negative stereotype that I'll get old and I'll get frail. I won't be able to remember things. I'll be unable to do things anymore than get placed in a nursing home until I die. Well, who wants to get old if that's what you believe all your life, right? What you've been told. Well, now I am old. Actually, realizing that has been a whole new learning for me. I practice looking in the mirror and telling myself I'm old. I'm quite comfortable telling people I have 76 years of life experience now. And when someone says to me, you don't look that old, I've practiced saying, this is what 76 looks like. 76 can look like many different things, but this is one of them. And 2 years ago, I was in the audience of at a conference when the speaker, Dr. Bill Thomas, said it was ages to stay to say he's still working or she's still sharp as a tack. He asked, why would anyone need to use the word still? Why not say he's working or she's sharp as a tack? I felt shocked to find out that ageist language devalues, you know, older people. So I thought, oh my God, I say that all the time about my mother-in-law because she was smart as a tack. I smartened up fast on that one and I've never used still since. But I continue to examine my beliefs about age and then intentionally make a choice to change my ways for the better. I'd really like to leave this world a little better place for those who follow me. I think all of life is a preparation for old age, really, and it's developmental tasks. I've learned to appreciate older age. It offers the greatest opportunity for spiritual self-discovery than any other stage in life. With a more expansive perspective and a deeper inner wisdom, I've become conscious of a higher sense of purpose, a feeling I'm walking the right path for me. I choose to see old age as a gift.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Thank you. Another bit of wisdom Nancy has passed on to me is that one reason both ends of the age spectrum are devalued is that our culture values people who produce things. Specifically, things and services that can be monetized. If you don't earn money for your work, your gifts are undervalued. Housewives of the 50s knew this well. So one way to fight ageism is to value those gifts. Volunteer work, as well as spiritual gifts, emotional gifts, wisdom, care, gifts of being, as well as gifts of doing. I remember when I was in my 20s thinking how strange it was when young people would say derogatory things about older people. It's not like they're a different category of human. Unless we die young, we will all eventually be old. To dismiss old people is to dismiss your future self. Similarly, to dismiss children is to dismiss your past self. We are not separate. The little kid, the old person, we are all that person. I was hopeful that this connection would predispose us to having empathy for one another. We can work on noticing and unlearning ageism. We can point out examples to one another, counteract the messages that we've absorbed from our culture about how to treat the very young and very old. We can create new cultural waves, shape our institutions to honor the experiences and varying needs of the very young and the very old. And on an interpersonal level, we can practice our first principle with laser-sharp intention. Regard all with respect and dignity. With little kids, with elders, we can practice leaning in, taking each person seriously, listening intently, honoring each individual human and the unique gifts they have to share. Practicing our first principle with laser-sharp intention works against so many of the isms that make people feel invisible or less than. Classism, racism, sexism, ableism, the list goes on. This is what our faith calls us to do. In the words of the Unitarian Universalist song, when we tell our story from deep inside and we listen with a loving mind and we hear our voices in each other's words, then our heart is in a holy place.
So may it be. Let's take a moment to breathe and ponder as Nick plays a brief interlude.
Although we're not able to pass a physical basket today, please give as you are able. The church is especially in need of your support during this time of income loss due to COVID-19. You can give by mailing a check to the church or by clicking the donate button on our website. For some of you, this is a time of financial hardship. If you are in need, especially for rent, food, or medication, please contact Reverend Shauna Lingood, who will direct you to our church's Lifeline program to get help. We will get through this challenging time together. Over to Melora for extinguishing our chalices.
Thanks, Sam. Before we extinguish our chalices, I ask you to once more go into gallery view. Click the button that says gallery view so you can see one another, so we can see one another. And let's do our heart blessing. So, oh, there you are. So good to see you. So I invite you to place one hand on your heart and one hand up for the screen. Place that one hand on your heart and breathe in. Close your eyes. Feel all the love you have stirring in your heart. All that love inside your heart. Close your eyes. Breathe in. And then as you breathe out, open your eyes and look at all the people on your screen. May you be well. May you be well. May you be well. So may it be. Thank you. We can switch back to speaker view as we extinguish our chalices. Let's extinguish our chalices. And then we'll sing Carry the Flame together. As we sing Carry the Flame together, the lyrics will be in the chat and Nick will play the music.